podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden T20 World Cup Daily Podcast. England are in the World Cup final after absolutely annihilating India in the second semi-final. I'm Yaz Rana, and to talk through that game with me today is Mark Butcher and Phil Walker. That was really good. That was really fun. Butch, we weren't totally sure why England opted to chase at the start of the day, but it turned out okay in the end.
Yeah, well, it shows the value of actually being at the ground, I suppose, rather than being 10,000 miles away. But yeah, I mean, England hadn't chased very well in the competition, had they? They'd been very jittery. But clearly, that sort of, you know, even the stats sort of go against chasing at the Adelaide Oval. But they obviously saw something either in the surface, or that they knew that there was going to be some dew around or something in the pitch early on that made them think that they could make inroads with the new ball and not allow India to put something huge on the board. And as it turned out, I mean, they might even have been just thinking, you know what, we don't want to have Kohli chasing against us, and made the decision based on that. Whatever the decision was, whoever made it, for whatever logic, it was clearly a belter. And I suppose that it was teed up a little bit by what happened in the final five overs of England's innings. You know, India really struggled. Kohli had struggled for timing. They'd all struggled to time the ball in the early part of the game. But then that last five overs, you know, again, we're a long way away. I don't know whether the air cooled or whatever it was. Suddenly the ball was flying onto the bat and flying out of the ground. So there's two ways of looking at that. One is, oh my God, we've had a shocker at the death. Or, you know what, this thing is getting easier to strike the ball on. And it turned out it was the latter.
We'll go on to how England bowled later, but I don't think England bowled badly at all at the death. Phil, England's attitude is just different to other teams. There's a bit on commentary where Owen Morgan was talking about an answer Josh Butler gave in a press conference yesterday. He was asked, what is a par score? And Butler said, well, we don't really believe in par scores. We want to win games with winning scores. You kind of saw that today. India
the contrast
got up
was
to
stark.
170, but they couldn't really have got much more. They were looking to get 170 max, really.
The contrast was stark, and the post-mortems from India's side are only just going to be beginning, right? They suddenly looked like a very pedestrian, slightly ageing side with players in the field who were struggling to get around a little bit, and an approach, a philosophy, grounded in a belief in the kind of the overwhelming power of icon cricketers at the expense of clarity of thought for me. The way that England go about it, the model is there, and it's been there now under Morgan and now under Butler. It's been there for quite a long time, and it's baffling that teams don't simply try and ape it and arrange their team around it. India looked like a team that was still thinking that it's 2015. The game, and it's baffling because they are the kings of T20 cricket, you know, in so many ways, and they are obsessive over the theories of T20 cricket. And so, for them to be playing an outdated version of the game, to be keeping wickets in hand, to be getting up to 40 out from six if they're lucky, and then trying to explode from 16 to 20, that's an outdated way of playing the game. And as you're absolutely bang on, they got 168. They couldn't have got many more. Okay. Sky could have had another day out and they could have got 175, 180. But as we've seen,
nowhere near enough.
Would have been nowhere near enough on that pitch. A lot of talk about it being a used pitch. Well, it's still Adelaide. It's still the best batting track in the world. So, yeah, the post-mortem will begin in earnest in India now. And there'll be a number of players in that side who won't feature again. And there'll be a number of players, great players, all-timers, whose positions will no doubt now come under review, because they can't carry on playing that kind of safety first, risk averse cricket, because as you've seen, they've been blown out of the water.
If you just look at the side they have, but you can kind of understand why they go about their way quite cautiously. With Axar Patel at seven, it doesn't give them a lot of leeway to really go for it if they lose an early wicket like they did today. But they're not New Zealand. It's not as if they don't have other guys. They have so many players who we know are brilliant hitters in the IPL. It's taken India, you know, they've still never won a T20 World Cup since the IPL started. That's an incredible stat that gets more and more incredible the more the time passes.
Well, yeah, and I think potentially the cult of the individual plays into that a lot. You know, I made comment about something like this when England played Pakistan in Pakistan. Now we're right back there again, because the whole saga began back in mid-September. In the, you know, when they talk about the game or talk about the batters, they often use an you know, the average is the first stat that comes up rather than the strike rate, whereas England's mythology and thinking around it is always strike rate first, average doesn't even matter. It comes a distant 25th in terms of the things that are important to a T20 team. And so if you're kind of building your run making around the theory that you've got to give your icon players as much time as they possibly can, we will get enough runs and then our bowlers will bail us out. It's not a bad theory if those are the only options that you have. You know, India could basically build a T20 team however they wanted to play in any way that they wanted to, given the resources that they have at their disposal. But the thing that stops them from doing that at the moment is that there are certain players who are sacrosanct, and certain, you know, certain titles that are just not allowed to be off the page, you know, during these sorts of tournaments. But anyway, you know, let's not focus on India, because frankly they're gone and gone in some spectacular style. Let's focus on what England have done and what England have done not through the course of the tournament, because they haven't been great, have they? I mean, we said on the pod on Monday, was it Monday or was it Tuesday? I can't remember. That they hadn't clicked for them at all yet. They've not chased particularly well. The only sort of like the bright spots have been Sam Curran with the ball. So he had a slightly less than good day today. Adil Rashid, again, brilliant, and more on him in a moment. And the fact that Butler and Hales had just started to look as though they were coming to some sort of an understanding at the top of the order, at least their styles of play were beginning to sort of gel together. Because don't forget, they didn't play at all in all of those seven matches in Pakistan. And people were talking about whether Salt would be better, whether he'd get off to more of a flyer. But you just felt in the last game, the must-win game against Sri Lanka, that was coming together very nicely. So despite all of that, you know, I say all of that, those are the only sort of three or four high spots I could think of in the tournament so far. England were in a semi-final, and then suddenly they get to the semi. They have to make two big changes. You know, Mark Wood could have been a nightmare miss for them. You think about him bowling at somebody like Skye. If Skye had got going, that might have been a matchup to tilt things back to England. He was gone, and England coped with that very well. And Milan not playing was not missed. You know, and I've said this from before we even started the tournament that we had one too many top order batters in there. We've lost one and haven't lost anything. In my view, even though Phil Salt replaced him. So you just feel that Josh Butler was fit from probably about game three of that Pakistan series, if you can cast your mind back, and he didn't play the entire series. And you're just thinking, wow, they're leaving this late. But all he said and all the management said that entire time was, peaking now, it's about peaking at the right time. And with one game to go, it looks as though they're well on the road to doing that.
Mm. Yeah, I reckon I could have batted three today and England would have been okay.
I just want to jump in on what Mark was saying there. Ben Gardner made the point just now. Half of England's probable first team weren't playing today, when you think that Jofra is nearing fitness but obviously hasn't played in a year and more. Milan will be in that first 11 in most occasions. And then you have, obviously, Bairstow at home as well. Mark Wood out of the side as well. Topley as well didn't make the final squad due to injury. So,
and then 6 months ago, Owen Morgan was captain and Jason Roy was at top of the order. So there's so much change in a very short period of time.
Indeed. And it's still old habits. You can't shake them, right? And it's still I still have to hesitate before I fully understand that England, good old English cricket, with its devotion to playing straight and playing under your eyes and all the rest of it, are these trailblazers in white ball cricket. But they've been like this now for half a decade and more. So I have to get with it. Yeah. I do have to get with it. But it's still a haltingly strange thing to say, I think.
That just backs up the point that you started and that I finished about sort of, you know, about if you have the resources, and England clearly do, because they can pick two 11s, you know, this is almost, you know, mark two, pick two and a half 11s perhaps, and still be able to play exactly the same way. And yet India, with all of their vast resources in terms of players and you know, experience and all that kind of stuff, are still stuck playing a way that actually most of their younger players and better players would balk at wanting to play in a team that played like that. So don't worry. I mean, they'll spin it around pretty quick.
Yeah, I almost hesitate saying this before the final, but they're almost like the Barcelona of white ball cricket, in that it's not just they're good, it's they play in a particular way and everyone coming through also plays that way. There's like La Masia, the academy. It's like all the young players who come into the team play in exactly the same way and know exactly how they play. Domestic cricket, kind of everyone in English domestic cricket plays that way these days. And just kind of on England's last 7 years, I think it's worth outlining how good they've been at white ball cricket. 2016, they're two balls away from winning the T20 World Cup. They win the 2019 World Cup, two balls away from getting to the World Cup final last year. And now they're into this final without Archer, Bairstow, Topley, Wood, Milan. It's incredible. I mean, Joe made the kind of cheeky point on the WhatsApp group before we start recording that what's the point of this high performance review when England could be holding both White Ball World Cups in a couple of days' time, and the Test team is playing as well as it's done in years.
Events, dear boy, events.
Phil, there were three superstars today for England: Hales, Butler, and Rashid. I'm going to start with Rashid because I think he was the most important. He bowled like no one else did in that match. It was absolutely stunning. Maybe his best World Cup performance for England. He had one very good game against West Indies in the last World Cup, but given this is a semi-final, given the class, the opposition, and how good they are against spin on that wicket, short square boundaries, he was unbelievable today.
Beautifully summed up. And he got the best player, probably the form player in the world, maybe after Butler, in the format. He got him out and did him. Nowhere near the pitch, ran down the track and skewed it out to deep square, and he was taken on the boundary by Phil Salt. And that encapsulated everything that he was about. I think he bowled the final over of the power play when India were already behind the eight ball and clearly looking to try and get to some kind of parity or just below parity after six. And he was just unplayable. Just, I think, in fact, Rohit swept him from his first ball, indication of where Rohit wanted to go. And he couldn't lay a bat on him after that. I think he went for three from the next five deliveries. And that over showed you the full range. You know, the one that just comes out the front of the hand and it just digs in the pitch. The pitch was there for any player to cash in, and it was shown. You know, Ashwin went for 27, I think, in his two overs. So what he did in the context of that 20 overs was memorable, I think. And it backs up what he did 2 or 3 days ago as well. You know, he was man of the match 2 or 3 days ago against Sri Lanka. He could easily have been man of the match tonight as well. It was staggering. But throw it over to Mark, because, you know, he's had to try and flatten a few lunkheads, let's put it that way, delicately.
Well, you put it delicately. I'm not going to. I've had some mouth breathing knuckle draggers on Twitter at me since again back to the Pakistan series, suggesting that the only reason that Adil Rashid was in England's side was because he had dark skin and was a Muslim or wasn't a white guy. At one point, I had to point out to a bloke that David Willie wasn't playing in Adil Rashid's place because he didn't bowl leg spin, or at least if he did, I hadn't noticed him practicing it. It's just, you know, so I'm absolutely delighted. In fact, he bowled magnificently in the New Zealand game as well. It was only after Glenn Phillips tagged him, didn't he, in his last over, but he should have had Phillips out had Mo helped him out with that dolly at extra cover. So in the last three games, he's really sort of turned it on. The dip has returned. I thought he'd been a little flat. It was a little flat through the sort of like the early part of the tournament. The googly didn't seem to have as much bite on it, or at least he was favouring it a little bit more than the leg break. And the leg break went magnificently again today. So yeah, I mean, he's such a huge component. And don't forget the catch. Took an absolute stunner really diving catch. To his right at short third man to get rid of Coley off CJ. Another great return from him. I'm surprised, you know. The only reason that he's playing in the side is because he's one of the best death bowlers in the world and one of the greatest fielders to ever play the game. It might be the colour of skin, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Rashid was absolutely brilliant. We'll get on to Chris Jordan and how England, the seamers bowled in a little bit. Mark, I just wanted to ask you about Hales. For his 3 years, it must have been very weird personally seeing him lift the World Cup in 2019 when he'd been such an important part of that squad, and maybe not necessarily the 11 by the very end of it. He was absolutely sensational today. So good at targeting the small boundaries. I think the vast majority of his boundaries were targeting the shorter ones. And that was the innings that really propelled England. I know Butler caught up towards the end, but it was Hales' fast start that allowed Butler to play his natural game.
Well, I think you asked me, and I think Wardy may have asked me again while I was out in Pakistan about whether or not England might think about perhaps having Salt up there with Alex Hales, and you know, Hales hadn't quite got off to the sort of start. And on each occasion, every time I've been asked the question, I just thought, no, I mean, no. You know, you do not bring back a guy with his record of scoring runs in Australia, his hunger and desire to come back in and make up for lost time. And his, you know, his brutality really against bowlers of all types. You don't bring him back and then leave him on the bench. Not at 31 or whatever, however old is he, 31, 32. You bring in a guy like that because you bring in somebody and you know what you're going to get, and it is going to be box office. And look, it's a format in which nobody can go out there and come off all the time. And if you're playing the sort of strokes and you're trying to hit the ball as hard and hit the ball as far and hit the ball, you know, he a couple over long off today down in there, and I played at Adelaide, and I stood out there in the middle and thought, it's going to take me three goes to get it for four back pass. You know, and he donged it back over the bowler's head twice in the early pass. He's just, you know, that's why you pick him. Otherwise, leave him out. You know, you don't bring in a guy like that and then go, oh, you know what, we're going to try somebody else. You know, Phil Salt's time will come. He will get his go. It might even be by the time we get round to the next T20 World Cup, where he might be playing instead of somebody else. But right now, it's Hales' time. He's done his penance. You know, everyone has sort of managed to move on. He's been punished enough, and he was rightly punished. Don't get me wrong. But he is absolutely magnificent, and in that sort of form, irresistible.
Now we can say this because it's all done and dusted. There were certain sort of key moments that you can keep going back to in that innings. The first moment was in the first over. Butler creamed three boundaries. Two of them, he had no right to hit them for four, well outside the eye line, on the rise, and he just puts these magical hands through it. He's the most natural timer of a cricket ball that I think England has ever produced. And then he flicks one through mid-wicket. So suddenly they're 13 off the first over with a wide in there as well. And then, as Mark says, Hales launches one over long off, again, very much on the rise, demonstrating that the ball was coming on under lights, much nicer than it was maybe at the start of India's innings. And then, for me, the moment when I thought, oh, right, they're going to cruise this, was when Ashwin came on. And he looked like he was getting a bit of purchase initially, a little bit of dip as well through the air. And Hales picked him up behind square. So obviously, you're naturally going to have a deep square. And he picked him up behind square from a delivery that was on off stump, maybe slightly outside off stump. And he engineered it. All that, again, that sort of clarity of thought that you keep going back to with this England side. And then the execution and the audacity. And it all rolled into one. It landed on the cushion, landed on the rope, bounced back. And then he did it again the following over off Ashwin. And then it moved from being a bit of an arsenic or an assumed arsenipper to a sort of wild, hilarious Mardi Gras style process.
Very quickly went from, oh, this could be a really close run trace. Oh, England got off to a flyer, but you've got to remember the Sri Lanka game. So, oh, England are going to win this with four overs.
I think Joss hit one off Axar as well. You know, I'm trying to impress upon sort of the youngsters and stuff about the way that these guys hit the ball and how they generate the power that they do. Axar bowled a perfectly serviceable delivery, pitching on off stump, and Joss gave himself the tiniest bit of room with both feet planted on the floor, back foot, launched it over extra cover, almost went for six. Yeah. And it's kind of like, oh my God. You know, just outrageous hitting. And he makes it look, thing is that they do it in such a way that it makes it look like that was nothing. It was kind of like there was no, you know, there was no skill or audacity involved in it whatsoever. But oh my God, you try and do that and you make yourself look like an absolute bellend. It's such a great shot. I can't tell you.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding smug, a word for poor old Mo Shammy, who picks it up at fine leg and then lobs it over short third man or you know, deep third over his head. It's an all run four, and you get these sort of little glimpses, these vignette moments where you think, oh my word, you know, this is a team that isn't quite ready for the requirements of this kind of hyper quick, hyper athletic modern game. And Shammy, who's a champion seamer, and the way that he just jumped up embarrassedly as the ball looped over the fella's head, and then he had to lope and get it, and you got it a little bit with Ashwin as well. Then there was the Sky moment when it was going to plug and it landed in his fingers and it knocked over the boundary. This happens when you're under the pump with all teams, but it felt creaking for me watching India tonight, you know, and it turned from being a tight one to a comedy of errors really towards the end.
Mark, yes, there was a video of Matthew Hayden talking to the Pakistan team after they won their game, and he talked about how the big matches in World Cup semi-finals and finals are defined by the big players owning it, and that really did happen with England today, and it didn't really happen with India. Like, what do you put that down to? What kind of goes into a player like Butler today just waking up and absolutely nailing it?
I don't know. I mean, because I've never been it, so I've got no idea. But one thing I do know is that if you look back to India's big moments in this tournament so far, and it was probably only the one, it was the win against Pakistan. It was engineered and pulled off by one man, wasn't it? It was kind of, you know, Kohli. So England, you know, and again, I don't know exactly why they did what they did at the toss, other than brilliant, well done, great call. But it surely must have come up in conversation. You know what? If it comes down to it, we really prefer not to have Virat chasing something down out there. You know, we take that out of the game, and that's the one thing less to worry about. And under those circumstances, then India have to kind of come up with a much more collegiate effort to try and beat England. You know, it has to be, you know, the performance has to come from everywhere, as opposed to waiting for one guy to pull out a miracle. And when it comes to England, again, I just think, how the Hales and Butler thing, it was bubbling, it was brewing, and you could see it coming. And Joss, I'm just watching I've got it, the highlights on behind you. He just hit that shot over extra cover off the back foot. And Joss kind of gets himself into this mode where you just feel like, okay, but it's not that everything else beforehand wasn't very important, but now it's really important. I'm going to concentrate and play properly. and it kind of looked like that. I mean, you were quite right to bring up the three shots in the first over. I mean, geez, he hit them hard. Mm-hmm. Like, absolute exosets through extra cover, the first two, from, you know, blameless deliveries. Mm-hmm. And that's the skill of the man. And the thing is, the frightening thing is, and I've said this all along, which is why anybody asks me, I say England are going to win it. Pakistan coming up, so that throws everything out the window, because you have no idea what that means to them or to us. But I think, can England win it? Absolutely, they can, because they have got so many guys throughout that batting lineup, none of whom have actually done it yet in the tournament, but who are capable of playing a Surya Kumar Yadav innings, a Joss Butler innings, and Alex Hales innings. And so at some point they're gonna click, or some of it only takes one, but in England's case you could have four, and then look out when you're playing against them.
Very quickly, got to mention Hardik Pandya. He whacked 50 off his last 18 balls at the crease. Obviously, Phil, he was brilliant. But how do you think England bowled to him? Because I kind of thought they were broadly fine. It was just with those short square boundaries, there wasn't that much you could do. Good balls were going. I think Sam Curran bowled a perfect wide Yorker. They got hit for four. It was difficult out there for the bowlers.
Yeah, Chris Jordan bowled well. He missed a couple by literally 3 or 4 inches, but he's got such strong forearms. He's not a bulky-looking bloke.
It's Pandya.
Yeah, sorry, but he's got a kind of elasticity in the way that he hits it, and he can strong-arm anything from any position, unless it's an absolutely perfectly landed block-hole delivery. He hit a couple of sixes in a row, didn't he? Both off Jordan. Neither of them were particularly bad balls. He's just missed his mark by a tiny fraction. And again, Sam Curran's figures don't look great, but I thought he bowled well at the start and at the end. The thing is, the thinking is great, is good with England. You know, they were bowling wide Yorkers, knowing that if you dig it too much in on the short boundaries, blah, blah, blah. The thinking is good, but the batting is great. So sometimes you just got to come up against that. Well, we go back to the point right at the beginning that's the best they could have got. And therein lies the problem for India. You know, Pandya got them out of trouble and they were still humbled by the end of the game.
68 off the last five. I mean, they had at 115. And, you know, the sort of like the boilerplate numbers for the last five is 10 and over. You know what I mean? So yeah. they're only just above that. Yeah. And that's with an extreme acceleration at the very end, but they just left themselves with too much to do.
And just finally, England-Pakistan final. That's going to be fun. Phil, very quickly, how do you see that going? What's the point in predicting
it? it doesn't make any sense. Don't try and make any sense of it. Just enjoy it. Just sit back and watch the carnage take place.
Butch, final word to you.
You bring up the idea of the big players kind of moving into gear when it matters the most. So Babar and Rizwan now have runs behind their backs, having struggled really up until the last two games. And of course, Shaheen Shah Afridi is now looking like back to his best again. So that they've got a lot of dangerous players in there. I mean, even old Iftikhar slogging 50s for fun in the middle order. A middle order that couldn't buy a run in the seven match series against England. All of a sudden, they're doing good things as well. They are going to be very, very dangerous. You know, the thing with, if you let them into the game somehow, one way or the other, then you've got problems on your hands. If England perform like they do today, you don't have to worry so much.
The only way Pakistan can win the game, I think, is if Shaheen does a number on the top two or three and England are suddenly 30 for three, or 30 for two, 40 for three, and then you're into that middle order, which, as Mark just said, you know, it's sort of simmered along. Brooke, Livingston, Curran, simmered along. Mo's not had a great tournament with the bat either. Then, obviously, Pakistan are well in the game. But if Shaheen doesn't do a number up top, then England just got too much, you know, through the 20.
Interesting to see what happens. Again, you know, different ground, different dimensions, different pitch. You'll have to look at all of those. They will have to look at all of those things. But I wonder, you know, you don't really want India chasing because of the Kohli factor. Would you rather be defending against Pakistan than have them defend against you with their bowling lineup? You know, obviously it didn't go well for them against Zimbabwe or India at the end, but only by a whisker. So you know, it'd be interesting to see whether England reverse their tactics from the semi final for a team in Pakistan who you would think their strength is definitely in their defensive bowling.
Well, it's England versus Pakistan at the MCG in World Cup final, not for the first time. We've got that to look forward to on Sunday, as long as the rain stays away. The forecast is really not looking very good. But anyway, cheers for your time, Phil. Cheers for your time, Mark. This has been the Wisden T20 World Cup Daily Podcast. We'll be back straight after that final on Sunday.
Podcast Network.